Yeah. See, we'll get the Reverend to know the whole history pretty soon now.
I'm always learning and I love it. It's great. Okay, well, right at noon, why don't we formally begin with Gassho and we'll start our conversation. Good.
Okay.
Can you join me in Gassho? Namo Amida Butsu. Namo Amida
Butsu.
Namo Amida
Butsu.
Namo
Amida
Butsu. Okay, thank you all very much for gathering. This is our second session of the day. We heard earlier from some of our long-serving Sangha members. Just a moment here. Just disregard that phone ringing in the background here at the temple. And then today, for this session, I wanted to talk about some of the what goes into setting up for the bazaar, the preparations, and some of the history of how we prepare for our bazaar at the San Mateo Buddhist Temple. So, let's see, I wanted to just begin with some introductions. So, we're joined this morning. We have Bill Tsukida is with us, joining us via telephone. And then we also have as long as I've been at the temple, our bazaar chairman, Roger Fujinaga. We have Victor Iwamura also, who has served for many years as temple president, very active in bazaar. And we also have Susie Lee, who is here throughout the year, she and Donald, but Susie in particular, spends many, many hours in the lead up to the bazaar here. And so we're very grateful to all of you for spending time with us. And we have others as well who are joining us on the call who are involved with bazaar and have been involved over the years. So we'll welcome everyone to share some memories and some reflections. Maybe we could begin just with some introductions, perhaps just share your name, so we can kind of associate the name with the voice as we listen to the call, and then also kind of what got you involved with the bazaar. So why don't we start with, let's see, we'll go alphabetical maybe. So we'll start with Roger.
Hello, everyone. My name is Roger Fujinaga. I've been an active member with the temple for almost 60 years now. I've been chairperson of the bazaar for, this would have been my 13th year, so I guess lucky 13 struck. and I really don't remember how I got sweet talked into being the chairperson. I think maybe I asked if I could borrow the keys for the temple one day from someone, and I think they didn't want to get it back. So ever since then, I've been the chairperson for the bazaar.
That was me.
And that's right.
I said, you want to do something for 1 year?
13 years.
So thank you, Sensei, for hosting this. And I think I joined the earlier one, and I think it's just I think it's a great forum and a great event.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Roger.
Thank you, Sensei.
Take it easy. Get lots of sleep this summer. Lots of rest. Great. Victor, could you introduce yourself briefly?
Well, I'm the one who got Roger involved with the bazaar. I was bazaar chairman, I don't know how many years before that. And then after that, I was president, I guess vice president for about 8 years, and then became president for 11 years. And then I finally got Jeff to volunteer, or he volunteered. So then active with, not born and raised here. I was born in Lodi, and San Mateo was a lot like Lodi was. It was a small community. The bazaar was quaint. And that's kind of what attracted me. So I'm here.
And we are very grateful that you are. Great. Yeah. And then Susie.
Well, I'm Susie Lee. I got involved in bazaar and the temple because my children were at the age where we wanted them and they wanted to be in scouting. So we're, I'm a Christian, and Donald is a Buddhist. but we always felt welcome at the temple. And Mrs. Ishida, Dick Ishida, was a big reason why we joined the temple. And the scouting program used to be huge at the temple. And so for those reasons, that's how I got involved.
Great. Thank you, Susie. And then Bill Tsukida, if you could just introduce yourself and your connection with the bazaar.
Let's see. My connection to the San Mateo Buddhist Church started when I was a small child, and that was at the old church on 2nd and Delaware Street. And then in the 50s, they moved to the new building. And I've been connected to the church since 1940, I guess, 7 or 8. And I always remember the bazaar in the summertime and finally got involved in helping with the construction of the bazaar. And then recently, I'm a member of the card club. And the card club members and I, we went to help with the construction of the whole bazaar still. And I've always been connected with it until the 60s when I was out of the country, and then I came back and I'm living in San Mateo again, and so I connected back to the church.
Now, for those people, if I can interrupt. You know, we always had a hard time doing construction. And when Bill mentions the card club, these are guys that grew up in San Mateo. And they felt that they needed to give back to the community. So we were very fortunate in having them volunteer. And it makes the setup a lot easier. But some of these guys are not Buddhists. And, you know, they belong to Sturge or whatever. But they're all good friends, and they all get together and play cards. So we're very thankful.
Yes, we are. So I wanted to jump right in with a question about the setup and the construction. So we have recently, last year, we kind of transitioned about halfway from the long time way of setting up, which was the metal pipes with the Allen wrenches and the plywood tables. And that whole process, which for me, the sound of mid-June is the sound of pipes clanking on the parking lot. You know, I know a bazaar is coming when I hear that sound of pipes, you know, those metal pipes that clank, 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 and the dragging of plywood across the parking lot. And the sort of those sounds for me is what kind of gets me in the frame of mind for bazaar, and, you know, being out in the sun, working on those things, and then Susie coming out periodically and yelling at us to come in and eat, and just really, really that construction, creating that space is something that I really associate with the San Mateo Bazaar. And I wanted to hear a little bit about the background. I understand, Bill, you have some background on that, or a family connection to those old pipes and that original construction. Could you share a little about that?
Yeah, the original tables that they used were the ones that my grandfather and his friends built when they first started with the San Mateo Bukilkai. And then I'm just surprised they used the tables that long until finally this year they finally dumped them and got rid of them because they're awkward and they're heavy and you get slivers and all this other stuff. And they finally broke down and went to Costco and bought those new tables. And then the same thing with the pipes.
Yeah.
It used to be such a heavy, luckily, San Mateo has never had any injuries where people have sued the church and all this other stuff, because those pipes could have came down and really could do some damage, but they did. Luckily, we never had any major injuries because of that.
we never had a Cal OSHA audit because definitely it's the hard hat construction zone, no doubt.
Hey, Bill, we kept the old tables because every time we did the construction, you would reminisce about your father making them. So
Victor and I actually formally went to Bill to ask his permission if we could replace the wooden tables for the tables that we have now. So we did go to Bill to get his permission and approval.
Yeah, just for history, yeah. I got a message from Susan, but she said Jan was the one that went and drew up the construction and the pipes and went to go get the pipes because they're a special length. And he was the one that was instrumental in getting the booth set up and where they are now. And then he also did the barbecue pit. So fortunately, I wish Ron was here to he could reminisce. But
yeah, me too.
Yeah, Jan's group was the original group of people I call them the old Mises helped set up and all this other stuff, and then it started going from generation to generation. Unfortunately, now you just don't have a lot of the Sanse and Yonse who are involved in the church, and so it's hard getting the bodies out there. And I made a suggestion a couple of times where they said, if we can't get the bodies out there, then let's just cancel the bazaar. Which was
still our
to the chagrin of a lot of...
I said, Bill, you're still
our
supervisor.
Which was the chagrin to a lot of the people. So I just said, if you can't get the bodies out here, then forget it. Because there's a lot of work and we're not getting any younger.
I mean, people enjoy coming to the bazaar, but they don't realize how much work it takes to,
They love coming to it. Coming to it is the easy part.
Yeah. There's a lot of work that goes to set it up for the weekend. I mean, there's a lot of work that goes on prior, the whole week, basically, prior to the start of the bazaar. And then, of course, people that come during the weekend see the finished product, and it's kind of a shame because so much work goes into it, and it's just really for the weekend. And then, we go through a deconstruction, from right afterwards. But it's like Bill said, it's been a continuous challenge, and that's partly the reason why we transitioned into some of the canopies was just because of the fact that. It was just hard getting more and more people, I think, to come out. The people that were coming out were just getting, older, and we didn't want them climbing ladders. And, these are heavy galvanized pipes. And like Bill said, I mean, they're heavy galvanized pipes that there's just a little, you need basically an Allen wrench that you're tightening each connection point. And, fortunately, up until now, we haven't had any injuries. Where if one of those pipes got loose and fell on anybody. But, that's where we transitioned to the canopies. We saw other temples as well utilizing these pop-up canopies. And Jeff Inokuchi was really the task person and the leader to lead this project. And so I kind of asked him, and he, was very generous to come and help and lead that project. And Eric always comes out every year as well. And it's just a nice group of people that really put forth, I think, with the best efforts to put it all together for the weekend for everyone to enjoy and see the finished product.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think over the years, there's a lot of things that changed and it made an impact on the bazaar. For instance, the scouting program used to be huge at the temple. It was so large that the scouting leaders got super involved in the bazaar in order to be a scout member in the temple. The parents had to have an oral contract with the temple and the leaders saying that they would do a shift, their kids would do a shift at Bazaar, plus a parent would have to commit to a shift. And if they couldn't do a shift at Bazaar, they had to come and do a pre-Bazaar or a post-Bazaar shift. And if they couldn't do that, they had to donate specific foods or prize items that we needed to run the Bazaar. And we were at that time, we were in a transition of Bazaar and members. And the Scouts program took over the soda and the snow cone booth, and they were in charge of running that booth. And then they took with that a hand with the Dharma School, and they did the scheduling for the game booths and made sure there were adults to supervise the kids. And then 1 year at the barbecue booth, the group that ran that booth, they scheduled a wedding during Bazaar weekend, and they couldn't do the barbecue, the hamburgers and hot dogs. And so the Scouts took over that booth that year. And then we used to have program, and they used to have a senior YBA food
Susie, you're freezing up a little bit. One tip we had, if people are freezing, is maybe just temporarily stop your video, and then the audio might come through clearly.
But Donna was saying he was having Wi-Fi problems.
Oh, okay. So Susie, can you hear?
God, what, the one time I wanted to hear Susie too.
Sure.
So Susie, you were telling us about how the Scouts took over the snack bar booth, the hot dogs and hamburgers and so forth.
Oh no, the senior YBA used to run the food booth in that area. And then as their group got smaller, they moved from selling, they used to do curry and all the desserts that the BWA ladies used to bring in. And they moved over to the barbecue hamburger booth, which is right now by the park, on the other side of the parking lot. Yeah, so and then as the scouting program got smaller, we had less help to do Bazaar. So we had to give up the game booth and the snow cone booth and things like that.
I wanted to, something that both Roger and Susie talked about, the kind of the, you know, we put all this work into preparing the Bazaar, preparing to really, to me, it's about hospitality. So I wanted to hear from our panelists, what are some things that you do or that you're thinking about as we're preparing to welcome guests, and also hospitality for the workers? I know that's a big part of Susie's involvement as well, is caring for the workers. And so what are your thoughts on that? Or what are some of the things that you do or you're thinking about in terms of creating a hospitable bazaar for people to join in and participate?
I think for myself, I think one of the big focus is safety. And okay. That starts from the beginning when we just even start the construction. So, you know, being the chairperson, I assume that responsibility and try to make sure that, you know, safety from the standpoint of our helpers, it carries through to the weekend. You know, we ensure that, you know, we try to have safety and even for, you know, when we hire the security, I specifically have the security person on the outside monitor kind of the sidewalk, you know, as people are walking towards First Street and both directions. So I kind of have them watch and go to the parking lots and those type of things. So I think safety is a big part of it. And then second to that is just making sure everyone is just enjoying themselves on the weekend. That's foremost.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's that safety question. I mean, that was the, I think the main factor that has us doing what we're doing right now and not here, you know, working on Bazaar, doing the things we would normally be doing.
Exactly.
At this time, kind of gearing up for the big start, and you know, would be maybe we have about 2.5 hours, so we're kind of starting to get all the pieces in place normally. And I think the reason we're not doing that was a lot of it's about safety.
I mean, when we at the board meeting, when we first we had to reach a decision point on whether to go forward with the Bazaar plans or to cancel. I mean, the foremost reason was safety, you know, that we couldn't really guarantee the safety of, you know, our members that are coming out to help, nor the public that would be attending. And so, you know, at that point, other temples were also canceling the Bazaars, but, you know, that did play a big part into, you know, the our temple's leadership to basically cancel for this year.
And I think we can all agree sort of in hindsight that that was the right decision as we see these COVID-19 cases this week seem to be kind of exploding, even in our, you know, right here, San Mateo County, San Francisco County, Santa Clara County are all, you know, you look at those charts and they're all kind of on the rise again. So, you know, as things are starting to open up and outdoor things, I think made the safe decision.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
What are some other things that we do in terms of, I don't know if Victor
or
Susie or Bill have something to share that you think about when you think about hospitality at our Bazaar, both for the attendees and for the workers?
Well, for me, because I would go to the temple pre-Bazaar with Donald, the scheduling for the workers was always a touchy subject, because when we first started doing construction, the workers there, they knew in their head how everything was supposed to go and what timeline and how things were supposed to go up for second and third. And it was really frustrating for the young fathers to come to help during construction, because they were always told, just jump in and do the work. But they never knew exactly what to do. And luckily, Eric Targori stepped up, and now he has it all planned out and written down, and the men and the timeline and scheduling. And so that I see as one of the real biggest, most important change of setting up the Bazaar. And hospitality-wise, they used to just expect the men to come. I only worked with the construction crew. I didn't do BWA. But the men, they were just told to come and to work. And a lot of them were, the younger men, they were still working their regular jobs during the day. So we tried to figure out some way to encourage the young men to come out sooner after their work time. So we started serving dinner. And so there was no excuse for them not to come to do setup, because we would have dinner ready for them, and then they can just immediately do construction work. And to get them even there earlier in the morning, like Bill and his son or Dave, we started having breakfast, and so that they can just come and take breakfast breaks, and then so that Bill and those guys wouldn't go home and not come back after lunch, we started serving lunch. So they were literally captive there. We tried to keep them there as long as possible. So that was my end of hospitality for the workers.
And that's a venerable Buddhist tradition. I always think of our dear friend Richard Ferrella, who's is also a dedicated helper and supporter of the temple over the years. And he came once for a Dharma study session on Buddhism and psychology. And he said that, the food was so good and everyone was so nice to him that he just kept coming back. And so he was one who came for the Dharma and stayed for the food. And I think Susie has been serving that important role in the Sangha for as long as I've been here. And we're very grateful to, all of, and she has a whole crew who comes and helps and prepares food. So I see we have, Eric is on the call here, and I want to welcome him to share some of his insights too about, so Eric, when did you take over in terms of the kind of the overall construction piece?
I was actually trying to look that up, how long it's been. It's not clear to me. It's been a decade or something, and presumably longer, but in fact, I was going through my computer, shoot, some of those before 2010, can't find the files, but it's been a bit of time. But it seems to me that I remember having a conversation with Dick Ishida. I was wondering who actually was in charge before me. And I do remember having a conversation with Dick Ishida because he did so many things. And he might have been largely in charge. But one of the things I remember is, everyone will remember the pipes and such. But there's those wrenches associated with it. And one of his words of advice was, you have to buy new wrenches every year because people will take them home or they lose them. And so I was anticipating that. And one of the humorous things is the first year or something, I put tape on all of them and I numbered them. And so I put numbers on them and I had people sign in. And we never had a problem after that. I never had anyone sign off after that first year, but at least it was a lot harder to walk off with a pipe wrench with blue tape on it. But I was just wondering who did it before. Maybe someone else remembers. But I do remember having a talk with Dick about that. But I absolutely want to thank Susie. That is may not be clear to everyone. I mean, the weeks before that she preps up, I wonder who did all the work that she did before she started doing it. Of course, Don. It's just unbelievable, let alone time afterwards. And yes, the meals were just as amazing and so important that I think there was a transition. I was told that the gardeners would after their work they'd come and work on the bazaar, and a lot of the work was done the morning of too, which explains sort of the later start or something. That's sort of historical. But by the time I was involved, then there weren't so many gardeners. There definitely were gardeners. And of course, these are physically capable people at the time. So, I don't remember early on the pipes being such an issue because, these guys certainly could do that. Which was wonderful. And of course, what's occurring now, and absolutely, the sansei are now, including myself, are all seniors, and getting up and down all those pipes. I think everyone was connected to the legacy of the whole thing, and absolutely builds its grandfather, right, the tables. And I absolutely, value legacy things, and that's been a source of great connection or joy for me, and so I absolutely appreciate that. And it was good, that Bill and all, everyone felt okay with the transition, but to lose that every year, we'd have to pull out the staples and such. I mean, it's all these things that were associated with that, and the splinters. You could realize that the splinters came from 50 years ago, that legacy. It was sort of a joyful experience being connected to that. So there's that. I'm not sure all the old things that are still present. One of the things that I like, this came up recently, it was Mukai. He just graduated high school, and I was explaining to him that his grandfather, there's a green canvas that we put right up against the chain link fence, and I know, I absolutely know that his grandfather built, designed it, you know, had it made. And his handwriting's on it. In fact, I think I was talking to Wes. And, you know, like, this is where you connected here. And this was, these are, you know, what he did in felt pen, you know, decades ago. And I remember during construction, we would always wait. We'd never put that up before. That was his canvas, and he would put it up. And when he was able, we would, you know, at least I would wait until he was able to come out and make sure he put up that part. And if you don't know, in the construction, it is technically, it's one of the first things that should be done because the pipes go right up against it. But we had always sort of leave space so we could stick it in there after the fact. And then we'd have to shift everything over, but it was so nice seeing him out. And he knew that was his, one of his jobs. I think there was a number of people that come out. They have a task at the temple that connects them, and so it was nice seeing. And he knew how to put it up. Of course, he built it. So every year now since that, I mean, I tend to have to describe, you know, how to lay it out. There's a little note on there on what to do, but inevitably people put it in backwards or something, or start on the wrong side, and then you have to sort of reinvent it. But so there is that. And you know, of course, we do have new people. Dave Kimura was of mine, but and of course Jeff, you know, Cucci on the recent redesign. But you know, trying to engage new people. There's so many people that enjoy it, and somehow, you know, we have to engage some newer people. And I think it'll occur, but that's certainly our task or something over the next few years, is to engage some people. I think with the newer construction things, it should be easier. We still have to engage on some newer designs. A little easier for people, but the legacy is tremendous. It occurs to me, like the Imagawa Yaki, that booth was built originally by Taco Tanari, and if you just go there, and you know, it's up there and it's white and there's plywood, but many of us together, and it is absolutely piecemeal. It's just amazing. And Tak, you know, of course, he built the temple, large parts of the temple, and everything's absolutely fantastic. Oh, his skill. But, you know, these are jobs that are done, you know, at the end of your day or something, and someone thinks of something and so scraps here and there. I guess it's sort of, occurs to me, you know, the robes and things, right, for the Buddhist, you know, they're often patchworks of fabric and such, and that is a prime example. There'll be a time we really have to rebuild it or reinvent it, because it's a bit of a chore. But you know, to think of the work that was done at the time. One thing I remember growing up to the bazaar, and I was, you know, in San Jose, and I remember certain things about the bazaar. And one of the things that stuck in my mind, you know, in retrospect, was there were some games and things that were built, and nothing was painted. And I realized after getting, you know, being involved in this, the reason it's, you know, not done, this is done, you know, there's a lot of thought on everything, but so much of the things are done, you know, after work and such, and just to get it together was just marvelous. You know, all the plywood awnings over everything, nothing was ever painted. I mean, there was huge amounts of work to do this, and that little extra step could have been done, but it certainly added, you know, for me anyway, added to the character, you know, of the whole thing. And it's sort of rustic in a way. It was fine. But at one point, Lee, not Donald Lee, Kenyon or something, volunteered to paint it. So it's white right now, but, you know, for decades, you know, it was just plywood, and we would put paper over it just to make it look better. There's lots of little bits to it, but, a bit of that. What other things? The safety issue. So we need to work on that. We always live in fear of food safety and you know, health concerns. And of course, we have COVID now. But the construction with the tents, and there'll be other parts that need to be done as well.
Yeah.
One thing that people, you know, just a thought is one of the joyful things to do is putting all this stuff away and taking it out. And I always, try to be one of the group that goes underneath the stage and pull all that plywood and stuff out. And we could be so thankful next time this is done that there's a lot less that needs to be pulled out because of the canopies. But that was just more than a challenging experience to get that. It gets so hot and you're and not dangerous, but talk about splinters and trying to get all that stuff out. We always talked about, you know, building something so we could pull things out easily, but that never occurred. But I do, you know, Susie, comment about the my notes and such. And so one of the things I remember, and it's still, you know, it exists, is the sequence on how you put all that stuff in there, because it would be chaotic, it'd be an adventure trying to put everything in there, let alone take it out. And at least there's a little structure to it, and that helped a lot. But I absolutely appreciate the people over the years, Dave Kimura, but I just know, like, Derek Kawahara. They're just any people. The person that was involved go underneath there, I always try to be part of the people. But yeah, all the work, getting all that stuff out and constructed. It does occur to me, like, there's the nickel and dime pitch. It's not, of course, dime pitch anymore. Got reinvented. Maybe someone remembers that whole, the dime pitch. But the last conversations we had, we weren't going to immediately replace that, which sort of surprised me. I mean, it's wonderful, but that is one of the legacy things that connect us with. And I'm not sure who's responsible for building that, but we... there's structure to it, and it makes sense. It's still being kludged together to make it work, but I do like things like that. And thanks to everyone to work so hard. And we're absolutely lucky that no one hurt themselves with those pipes. So, and we still have a set, and we shall see. I think we'll probably transition at some point, but
you can always put one together for old time's sake at some point. Do you remember when they started storing things under the stage? Has that always been like a bizarre part storage space, or when did they start? Do you remember when they started stowing all that stuff under the stage?
It's always been like that as long as I remember.
Yeah, Bill, do you have any recollection of that usage?
No, I don't.
No. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, sometimes people are like, oh, can I store this thing at the temple? And I'm always like, no, I'm sorry. I have to find the politest way to tell people that we don't have any extra storage space. Every single inch of storage space at this temple is well utilized, I think.
Well, Reverend, you know, we actually used to store even more under there because we didn't have the these containers in the parking lot. Probably since the last, maybe 15 or 20 years, but we didn't have those. When I was young, there were containers. Everything was stored either under the stage, in the sides of the stage, or up on the landing of the classroom.
Wow. Yeah, because those containers are full too. Does anyone know the backstory on the containers? Where did those containers come from?
I think one was donated. The first one was donated. And then that was the one that that's on the right side. And then the left side, we purchased it, I think it was like $650.
Wow.
And then one of the scouts painted it as their Eagle project.
Okay. Wow.
That's what I remember.
And it looks like they've almost like we've repaved the parking lot since they were there. Is that correct? Or
they've been from being there for so long.
I guess since this is Victor.
Yeah.
To answer, I guess Eric's question, there's one of my friends told me about the Niseis and the Iseis. His story was if the temple roof was leaking and their house was leaking, the Iseis and the Niseis would fix the temple roof first, and that's what's true during. Those times before, you know, they automatically knew that on this day they needed to come. They would just show up. I mean, I would sit there and wonder who's going to be here to do the construction. And all of a sudden I got six people. They just come without being asked. And I think that was the nature of how the mindset of the members were then, is that I need to come out and help set this up. And they do it every year. So it was never something that we had to look for people to do. They just came, which was nice.
Do you think that's changed?
Yes, very much so.
Why do you think so? Why do you think that?
Well, again, like I mentioned before, is, you know, the temple was their social place, not only to listen to the Dharma, but it was a place where the kids came and they saw movies and all that kind of stuff. So. And it was a place, the bazaar was one place where the community could get together and see each other every year. So it was important to them.
What we're seeing in this administration
isn't working politically either. And going with this, you know, one of the things that I was always worried about is the people pairing with, especially when it was hot, they wouldn't drink water.
Oh yeah,
and so I always tried to make sure that they were reminded to drink water.
Yeah.
And as far as during the bazaar, you know, it was I made sure I think we're one of the few temples that offer complimentary or drinks and food to visiting ministers and VIPs.
Yeah.
And I made sure that they were taken care of. And you know, Roger, I gave Roger some and I give you some.
Yeah.
But the whole thing was making sure, like Roger says, and Eric, you know, people were safe. They're having a good time.
Yeah.
And, I would check the booths to make sure they were okay. Yeah. So.
And I need to thank you for that, because every time I take my family to another bazaar, it's well reciprocated.
I think also, this is Roger, I think also it's part of maybe just the character of our bazaar and even probably the layout. But I find that, and even when our kids were small, it's probably one of the few bazaars that literally the kids can just run around on their own. They could play games on their own. I mean, you can give them money. They can go buy tickets. They can play games on their own. And, you know, the other members is kind of all looking and they know the kids. And so It's not, even though today I think we still have to keep an eye out, but for the most part, it's probably one of the unique characters of our bazaar that it's just a small enough of a bazaar, you know, parents could be enjoying themselves playing bingo or, you know, just having food and drinks, and the kids could be playing their games. And that's just kind of how our bazaar and the character of our bazaar, I think that's kind of real special as well.
Yeah, I agree. As a parent, you know, that's for me, you know, bazaar is one of the times I can remember when my kids like were not like I could just know that they were okay and that I didn't have to constantly be watching. I have three sons and two of them have been kind of bazaar age when they can actually go and run around and play. But they, you know, to know that, okay, you know, I know who they're with, you know, and I can sort of keep an eye on them, but they don't require the kind of constant supervision that they would normally need out in public, because there is that sense of the community connection. And I know that, okay, if I see them with this person, you know, if I see them with, you know, Yuko's daughter, Minami, and I know that they're going to be with Minami, you know, she's not just going to let them run off. That, okay, I can say, oh, they're with Minami, they're with Doreen, they're with somebody that I can trust. And I know that, okay, they might pass them off to someone else that I also trust, but they're not going to just let them wander off. And so I think that that's that sense of that community connection is something that we still have.
I think that's an important part of the bazaar that, I mean, we may, you know, from a construction standpoint, we might, you know, implement canopies and these type of things. But what I don't think ever want to lose is just that character and that feel that is underlying that of our bazaar, you know, that community, the centric of the community to kind of come together and enjoy themselves. Whether they're Sturge members, whether they're, you know, from our temple, whether they're Christian, Catholic, what have you, you know. I think that's what makes it nice and what we try to at least, you know, continue with our bazaar every year.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember as a kid going to bazaar. I don't remember what my parents were doing when I was playing games because, I was just allowed, I was given a handful of tickets and just told to get lost. And I don't remember ever seeing my parents during bazaar, as a little kid, because the only time I would see was when I'd hit them up for more money.
You know that they'll come, they'll check in. They'll keep checking in. It's like, okay, you're still here because you keep coming back and asking me for money. That's why you only give them like $5 at a time, because you know that they'll keep coming back and it's your way of monitoring. Yeah.
Hey, Ishii, you failed. You never got lost.
This is Susie. I wanted to say that it's real important for the bazaar thinking to be open to listening to members and non-members of how they want to be involved in the bazaar. Mm-hmm. Because there's been 1 year, you know, we didn't have a sushi booth. It was just closed. We had the bar in the classroom, but there was no sushi booth. Mm-hmm. And people came to the bazaar and they were amazed there was no sushi. And so we told people, well, you got to read your newsletter. We just couldn't recruit anybody to do the sushi booth. And that next year, a whole set of people reopened up the sushi booth, from Gary Katakita to now Mrs. Saruki does the whole thing. And then at one time they did smelt fish frying in that classroom. And then upstairs, there used to be a heavily gambling room, adults only. Yeah. And it was
Jeff mentioned that too. The rolling,
with the rolling balls until the wives just put their foot down and that was gone. And they didn't even save that board to convert to game booths. They burnt it. And then at one time, Akira Uramoto said he wanted to do a yakisoba. Mm-hmm. So he did it on a Weber one single black Weber in the corner by the next to the snow cone booth. And the next year after that, it was so popular, he moved it over to where it is now. And then at one time, Ted Shimoida stepped up and he did the tempera booth. And Hiro was around always, and he stepped up, and now he does the tempera booth. And then at one time, Rick Wada, he did barbecued salmon, and then the following year he did Korean beef ribs, and so it's, and then those same people, they just start small and then they just feel comfortable the next year and they just do more and more. I see that in the game booth that really took off.
Sugar put in there.
So it's nice to see changes in people's interest in the bazaar. I think that's what keeps the bazaar alive too, and bringing in the next set of generation of kids and helpers and families.
That's great wisdom, Susie. We'll have to think about what the next, you know, what the next generation can bring, because we're starting to see some of the, you know, people have mentioned Derek Kawahara. He's a third generation bazaar helper. I know you know, people like Kenji Watanabe, you know, I mean, Minami's, I can see her, you know, helping down the line, and others, interesting to see what they might bring to the table.
Yeah, and for 2 or 3 years in a row, it was really, we were in transition. It was really hard to get people to come out and do prepping for bazaar, smaller mm-hmm. things, mm-hmm. Because school was just ending, and it was hard to get, you know, kids to switch from doing schoolwork to, okay, now you got to put in all your daytime doing bazaar. So I remember Kenji Watanabe, who's married now and with a career, when he was just a kindergartner, he and his sisters, Rhea and Miho, with Jonathan Shen and his sister Monica, we made a crew, and we were responsible for buying all the sodas and the ice and the drink, snow cone syrup, all the supplies, all the game booth decorating, setting up for the BWA ladies, and then the transition went through, and now individual booths have stepped up greatly, and they do their own shopping and decorating and scheduling. Right. Mm-hmm. But if it wasn't for those five under 13-year-old kids, those 3 years would have been really tough.
Hmm. Yeah, that's great.
Don't say, this is Roger again. I think what's nice also is, you know, there's still just as a common thread of tradition that I think always still people remember and kind of still want to continue. Like, for example, you know, it's nice of Carrie Yoshimoto, you know, she stepped up to run chicken salad, and that's basically, you know, Mrs. Inoue's chicken salad. That was kind of her dish, you know, and her recipe. And, you know, Carrie stepped up and, you know, to this day even has been running that and carrying on that tradition. You know, we a few years back, as ramen was gaining popularity, we had a discussion over a couple of years of, you know, did we go to ramen or did we try to keep udon, which has, you know, kind of been running. And so, you know, ramen was gaining popularity, so we went with ramen. But then, you know, everyone still remembers, you know, the San Mateo dashi of our udon and everything. So, you know, there was a year when Gary Kawakita, you know, came to a committee meeting and asked if, you know, if we could bring udon back. And, you know, we always have this challenge of, it's always the same amount of work, if not more, but it's just a limited resource of helpers, a pool of helpers available. Yes. So you know, it's basically, yeah, if you suggest it, it's your booth. It's kind of an underlying rule we have. And Gary got a crew together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've been having udon, you know, thanks to Gary. So I think it's kind of nice that I think there are some members, longtime members of San Mateo that, you know, kind of still remember tradition, kind of still remember certain aspects of the bazaar. And, you know, kind of continue it. And that's what's, I think, really nice. And that's kind of hopefully, you know, we'll keep our bazaar going and remain and keep kind of the tradition and character of a bazaar as well.
Yeah. Thank you. So we're kind of closing in on our the sort of allotted time, but I wanted to ask everyone sort of as a closing reflection, I wanted to ask our panelists. So, you know, you all have worked very hard for the bazaar, at the bazaar over the years. And what is it that motivates you? What is it that kind of keeps you going, keeps you coming back out every year to help with the bazaar? Anybody want to share?
Well, this is Susie again. For me, my eyes opened up. I went to bazaar and I was a young mother then. And I saw these women, my mother's age, working really hard from day to night. And I said to myself, wait a minute, why are they working so hard? And I just said, well, I have to help. And I was a teacher, so I had my summers off. So it was no big deal for me to come in and make sure everything was done for them. Because the ladies, when they come in, they're not thinking about, oh, where are the pots and I need this thing and I need this thing and I need this thing. They want to just come to temple in the morning and get to work. They don't have time to clean off the counters or find the buckets or, mm-hmm. you know, find for Margaret, you know, the sushi thing. She doesn't have time to go running around and getting the molds and her supplies. She just comes in with the mindset is my job is to make this. I got to do it. So it's that's why I think we're really lucky at our temple. We take in consideration those needs of our workers because a lot of our workers are still working day jobs and they come to bazaar that morning and. You know, they have to get ready in a couple of hours for bazaar opening. So that was my introduction to it. And a funny antidote to this is one year I was cleaning up the kitchen and I left some of my supplies on the kitchen counter and I totally forgot about it. And I came back way late in the afternoon and the ladies were all working, hovering for space and everything. And in the middle of the counter was all my supplies taking up precious space, but they just want to do their job. They don't want to wonder, oh, whose box is that? Or can I move it? You know, or is this space mine? They just want to come in and do their work. So that's my thing. And I want to end my part in the discussion by saying it takes so long, many days and hours to set up, but it's amazing. In 3 or 4 days, everything's cleaned up. You can go to bazaar, you can go to temple and you look around and many times people have said, oh, is your bazaar this weekend? And we'll say, oh no, we just cleaned up. And it's amazing that if you didn't know we had bazaar, you would never know the big bazaar took place. And to commend Eric and Victor and Hero and those guys for making sure everything gets cleaned up. It's amazing.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Now, how about you, Bill? What keeps you coming out year after year?
For me, it's always been a traditional thing mm-hmm. because I've always been associated with the San Mateo Bukyokai for such a long time.
No.
But I'm seeing that. The other reason I think San Mateo is a little bit unique was that most of the Japanese Americans that lived in San Mateo had to live in North Central San Mateo. And so because of our restriction of where you could live, we were more or less, if you were a member of the church, you were more or less obligated to go to church on Sunday anyway. And then if you didn't go to church on Sunday, you knew the bazaar was coming up. So you got locked into that part of the tradition where my grandfather and grandmother always worked at the church. And so it was always understood that I had to go too. And so I see that as a sense of losing that attitude now, because I know my sons, they just don't have time to do the things that I did when I was young.
Yeah.
Because they're so spread out doing other things now that, you know, just to get my son to go to short ski with us has been a chore. But basically, the reason is lifestyles have changed and people no longer have to live in North Central San Mateo. Like at one time, I could just say, oh, yeah, you look down the block and say, okay, that's Japanese. But now the neighborhood's changed again, and so you lose that sense of community feeling, I think.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. And I think that's eventually going to have to happen anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the challenge, how to maintain that, some of that cohesiveness, and I think, you know, Roger...
Right. That's the hardest part.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, for me, Sensei, this is Roger. I don't have any personal attachment to being the chairperson, so if anyone wants to step up and be the chairperson, they can anonymously contact yourself and I'm good to go. I can drop off the magic keys that Victor gave to me and I can pass it forward, definitely.
You go out the back door and not worry about it.
I'd be happy to be a participant and come to still help, but just not lead.
I guess for me, one of the reasons I continue to do this is because of I see Bill coming out with my card crew, and so as long as they're coming out, I guess I would be coming out. But the biggest reason for me was that comment that the Sturge people made to me, because that's where I my first intro to San Mateo was, and since they made that comment, I really observant of the people enjoying themselves, eating the food, talking with people they haven't seen in years, and that fellowship is just very rewarding, at least to me.
I agree as well. It's so wonderful seeing, you know, this reunion environment. So Bill's right. I mean, the disconnect a bit, and we aren't isolated any longer, but people come back and... area, and then she kind of reconnects with people, and to facilitate that connection is some, you know, to see that sangha, that connection in a relationship, that is really a wonderful thing to see. And the other thing, it's Susie and Roger and everyone working so hard for, you know, really for unselfish reasons. It just, you know, not getting paid to do this, to see that kind of energy and engagement, dedication. Everyone's, you know, and maybe it's true, everyone is working a bit harder in terms of involving more people, but it is always the most satisfying thing for me is to see how hard people work in this, you know, this community experience, and that is very, very satisfying to be part of. Thank you to you all, and thank you, Roger. No, it's not an option for you to retire.
I just wanted to put it out
not
there.
Not yet. You're too young.
Yeah. And
I think that, you know, I know for myself and maybe others as well, it's just tradition. I mean, you think about the one event in our community that brings the Japanese and, or just the community, you know, it is, it's not only Japanese, but if we just focus on the Japanese community, I know when I was growing up, there's kind of always been this, like, not separation, but kind of this, you know, oh, you're Sturge, or, oh, you're, you know, Buddhist kind of a thing. But, you know, the bazaar has always been like the place where, just as a community, whether, you know, whatever nationality, whether you're Sturge or Buddhist, you just come have a good time. And I think for all of us, I mean, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of hard work. It's literally an all hands on deck. You know, you clear everything out for the whole weekend. You know, many of us, the one shift we have is the whole weekend. That's our shift, is literally the whole weekend and before and after. But, you know, to see everyone really enjoying themselves and having a good time, I think that's what kind of is the self-satisfaction and gratification that a lot of us get, I think.
Yeah. Me too. My hope is that people will continue that after this COVID-19 experience, where we've all been kind of, you know, sheltering at home, socially distancing, that people will have a renewed appreciation for these kind of gatherings. You know, it may be that bazaar won't look like it looked last year, if we're able to gather again next year, but that people will still, with bazaar and with other temple activities, will have a renewed appreciation for the value of coming and getting together in person. Right. After, right. At this point, we don't do it for safety, but I believe Governor Newsom, when he says, you know, we're going to get a vaccine, we're going to, you know, this is not going to be forever. We're going to get through this. And I'm hoping that as we come out the other side, that the temple and, you know, the people will have some sort of renewed appreciation for the connections that we share. So I want to thank all of you for taking the time to gather with us this afternoon and to share your memories and your motivations. And, you know, this session and all the sessions today are recorded, and we're going to put this up on the website so that, you know, future generations, I'm hoping, will sort of tune in and get some inspiration from the dedication. You know, the way we sort of venerably talk about the Issei and the Nisei, I think that, you know, there'll be a time when people will look back and the Sansei, you know, they kept it going. And I think that, you know, they'll be looking back to your voices and really grateful for all you're doing at the moment. So, well, what I want to do is conclude with Gusho here for this session. But as we did with the previous session, I'm going to leave the call open. And so if people want to continue to share memories and reflections, I warmly welcome you to do so. But let's have a Gusho, and we'll just do one break here. Namu Amida Butsu. Namu Amida Butsu. Namu Amida Butsu. Namu Amida Butsu. Namu Amida Butsu.